Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries. Katrina Allison Bushong, 59, was called to her eternal home on February the 15th. Eb Smith Jr., 59, passed from this life on Friday, February the 10th. Marjorie Nell Kasparis has also passed away.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 18, 2023. Few points. Midland, let's leave vile politics in the past. Stuart Doreen, editor. It's time to get things done in Midland. The COVID pandemic is over. Election season is finished. The conservancy discussion has ended. There's a new superintendent in town. And the laundry list of things to do seems never-ending. It includes, at Midland ISD, improving academics, making strides when it comes to discipline, and preparing for the approaching fiscal cliff. At the City of Midland, improving infrastructure, getting ahead of city planning needs, being proactive on water, bringing police and fire department workforces to levels appropriate for protecting today's population, and showing Midlanders what a vision for the capital of America's most significant oil patch should look like. At Midland County, building a 21st century jail complex, bringing water to those in the county, and establishing a sales tax collection that makes sense for Midland today, not decades ago. For Midland Health, making sure a mental health complex between Midland and Odessa is everything we need it to be, and upgrading facilities at Midland Memorial and doctor recruitment efforts. For Midland College, continuing facility development, being the leader of Midland's CTE programming, and finding the school's leader. As a community, we must address a workforce size issue that is our greatest obstacle to proper development and quality of place improvements. Your list is likely different than mine. Not addressed above were school district or city facility improvements, parks development, pre-K program expansion across Midland, new senior centers, and roads across the county. Still, the totality of what is in front of Midland is greater than anyone should like. Either way, let's get to work. Let's be the Midland that when the worst drought in a generation plagued our community, leaders made the T-Bar pipeline a reality. Let's be like the MDC leadership of the mid to late 2010s that accomplished so much more than what we had been accustomed to. Let's remind ourselves of Rosalind Grover and J. Ross Lacey, who respectively steered hospital and road bond referendums across the finish line by overwhelming margins. They did so because they were armed with good plans and better campaigns. Midlanders agreed. Let's embrace the giving of our oil businesses and philanthropy that last decade dedicated millions of dollars to help the school district with its deficits and give teachers needed housing stipends. Let's commit ourselves that governing matters more than winning. Whether it was a contentious election season that spilled over to a bitterly contested conservancy conversation, too much of our politics have been vile, divided, and not representative of Midland at its best. And I am sad to say, I could have done better in not getting sucked in. There's no need to offer examples of others or look back, because it frankly serves no purpose. From this point forward, we should look ahead at the possibilities, at the opportunities, and at what Midland could be. That is how Brent Hilliard, Keith Stretcher, and the rest of the MDC board of the previous decade, working with Sarah Harris, got things done like nearly finishing developments of Loop 250, partnering with Texas Tech University for needed psychiatric services or finding tenants for the spaceport at minimal costs. They looked for solutions that made sense for Midland. No one can tell me that there isn't the talent on the governing boards on the city, county, or school district to reasonably listen to issues that come up and decide what's best for all of Midland. I refuse to say one's brand or any collective trumps the true needs of a community. In the end, some of you likely expected a different opinion article in this space today. But why waste good space trying to argue yesterday's faux controversies when a laundry list of things that this community needs to get done stares us in the face every day? It's a waste of ink, and we are better than that. Midland deserves better. I say wipe the slates clean and see who really is there for Midland, for its residents in the city and county, for the education of its students, for the health care of an extremely diverse community, and to make Midland greater than it was 5, 10, or even 20 years ago. The people who stand for progress and responsible government will come to the forefront. The time to get things done is now. Midland Public Library, Not Immune to Perverted Content, by Chris Hopper, Texas Family Project. Across the nation, parents are confronting their local school board and county officials about obscene content being found in our public schools and libraries. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Governor Greg Abbott, and dozens of other lawmakers have all spoken out about this problem and the need for solutions. This month, I visited Midland to speak to the Midland County Republican women about this very issue and what Texas Family Project is doing to ensure lawmakers tackle the problem in the Texas legislature. After the meeting, I spoke to a local business owner who was shocked at the obscene content in the books and believed such material had no place in public libraries. He was, however, skeptical of such material being found out in conservative West Texas. I can understand how this might be a problem in Austin or Dallas, he said, but in Midland, we don't have that kind of stuff here. I don't fault him for having these doubts. If someone had told me 6 months ago that there was pornographic material in my community library, I would have shared this doubt. Sadly, this radical sexualization of our children is not bracketed to liberal cities. Later that afternoon, I drove to the Midland Public Library armed with a list of 1,000 inappropriate books and searched for the first 20 on the list. Of those 20, 16 were in the library's possession, and most were in sections designated for minors. I am a father of 3 young boys. Every parent is different. Some are very strict and don't let their kids watch PG movies like Star Wars or read books like Goosebumps. Some draw the line a little farther out. However, I don't know any parents who want their young children exposed to pornographic content. I don't know any parents who want their teenagers reading books that glamorize rape, drug use, and abortion. And yet, these kinds of books are on the shelves in even Midland. Take, for example, All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson, which the Midland Public Library has on its shelf in the young adult section. Written by LGBT activist George M. Johnson, the book contains sexual nudity, sexual activities including sexual assault, alternate gender ideologies, profanity and derogatory terms, alcohol and drug use, and controversial racial commentary. Or what about What Girls Are Made Of by Elana K. Arnold, which includes graphic sexual content and a 14-year-old girl getting an abortion. It's also in the young adult section at the Midland Public Library. Frustrated? Upset? You should be. Your tax dollars purchased these books, and your tax dollars are being used to try to get them into our children's hands. The good news is your elected school board members and county officials can get them out of the libraries in Midland, and your elected lawmakers in the Texas legislature can get them out of every public library in the state. At Texas Family Project, we're working to make that happen. Find out more about us at texasfamilyproject.com. Chris Hopper is the president of Texas Family Project, an organization dedicated to making the family the most powerful, well-represented force in Austin. He and his wife, Ashley, are raising their three sons in North Texas. A look back at Pfluger's energy security hearing in Midland. August Pfluger's office. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger was proud to host the Energy and Commerce Committee in Midland for a field hearing on American energy expansion, improving local economies and communities' way of life. Local leaders testified before the committee about the importance of the oil and gas industry to the Permian Basin community and national security. Witnesses included Lori Blong, Mayor of Midland and President of Octane Energy, Adrian Carrasco, Chairman, Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and President of Premier Energy Services, Stephen Pruitt, President and CEO, Elevation Resources, Chairman of the Board for Independent Petroleum Association of America. Excerpts. The role the Permian Basin plays. Midland, Texas, Odessa, Texas, the Permian Basin, are where our nation's energy debates should take place. And I'm excited that our community gets to showcase how the Permian Basin and those in the audience today are indispensable to America's economic and national security. Under Chair Rogers' leadership, this committee is committed to engaging with local communities to understand the challenges the American people are facing, many of which have been inflicted by this administration. Thankfully, the city anchors the most important region that is poised to solve many of the critical issues facing our nation and our world. The patriotic spirit of the Permian Basin. If you listen to the White House, oil-producing regions are greedy and unpatriotic, but nothing could be further from the truth. The story of the Permian Basin is one of innovation, unending entrepreneurial spirit, and community. In fact, Permian Basin producers have a long history of rising to the occasion. Extraordinary cooperation between the U.S. government and American oil companies is what helped win World War II, as Permian crude literally fueled General Patton's infiltration of the German border and eventually the defeat of Hitler. It is often quipped that the war was won by an inch, and that's true. The U.S. launched two incredible pipeline construction projects, the Big Inch and the Little Big Inch. The Inch lines delivered more than 500,000 barrels of Permian oil per day to the Northeast for the war effort and helped successfully safeguard the precious commodity from U-boat attacks. These pipelines are still in use today. Then again, in 2008, another engineering feat allowed Permian Basin producers to rise to the occasion when hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling enabled the U.S. to significantly increase production of oil and natural gas, leading to what is infamously known as the Shale Revolution. This put OPEC on its heels, establishing U.S. energy as an invaluable tool for our national security. The Shale Revolution. The impacts of the shale revolution have been undeniable. In 10 years, production in the Permian has grown from well under 1 million BPD to over 5.4 million BPD presently. That is over 40% of U.S. production. Globally, the share of crude oil production coming from Permian has grown from 1% in 2007 to nearly 6% right now. Just like it did throughout World War II, the Permian Basin is doing its part to make this country energy secure, helping fulfill Europe's needs as they wean themselves off Russian gas. You cannot understand U.S. energy dominance without visiting the Permian Basin or visiting with local leaders like we are today. I'm excited for the committee to hear from our excellent witnesses and discuss how current policies are affecting their operations.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023. Consumer Health. Reduce your risk of these cancers. February is National Cancer Prevention Month, which makes this a good time to learn what you can do to reduce your risk of the top four most common cancers diagnosed in the U.S. One in two men and one in three women in the U.S. will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime, according to the American Cancer Society. The most common types of cancer diagnosed in the U.S. are skin cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, and lung cancer, according to the National Cancer Institute. Here's what you can do to reduce your risk of each. Skin cancer. Skin cancer develops primarily on areas of sun-exposed skin, including the scalp, face, lips, ears, neck, chest, arms, hands, and legs. But skin cancer also can form on areas that rarely see the light of day, including your palms and the soles of your feet, beneath your fingernails or toenails, and your genital area. You can reduce your risk of skin cancer by limiting or avoiding exposure to ultraviolet or UV radiation. Avoid the sun during the middle of the day. Wear sunscreen and protective clothing year-round. Avoid tanning beds. Also, be aware of sun-sensitizing medications and check your skin regularly and report changes to your healthcare team. Breast cancer. Researchers have identified hormonal, lifestyle, and environmental factors that may increase your risk of breast cancer. And an estimated 5% to 10% of breast cancers are linked to gene mutations passed through generations of a family. It's not clear why some people who have no risk factors develop cancer while other people with risk factors do not. It's likely that breast cancer is caused by a complex interaction of your genetic makeup and your environment. Some risk factors, such as family history, can't be changed. However, you can make lifestyle changes, including limiting alcohol, eating a healthy diet, maintaining a healthy weight, and being physically active to lower your risk. And being vigilant about breast cancer detection, including regular mammograms and other screenings, can help detect breast cancer early when it's most easily treated. Prostate cancer. Your risk of prostate cancer increases as you age. Other risk factors include obesity and a family history of prostate cancer. Breast cancer, or the genes that increase the risk of breast cancer, BRCA1 or BRCA2. African-American men are at greater risk of prostate cancer than men of other races, and their prostate cancer is more likely to be aggressive or advanced. If you're concerned about your risk, you may be interested in prostate cancer prevention. While there's no proven prevention strategy, you can reduce your risk of prostate cancer by making healthy choices regarding your diet, weight, and exercise. Lung cancer. Although the disease can occur in people who have never smoked, people who smoke or have smoked have the greatest risk of lung cancer. The risk of lung cancer increases with the length of time and number of cigarettes you've smoked. If you quit smoking, even after smoking for many years, you can significantly reduce your chances of developing lung cancer. Lung cancer screening is a process that's used to detect the presence of lung cancer in otherwise healthy people with a high risk of lung cancer. Lung cancer screening is recommended for older adults who are longtime smokers and who don't have any signs or symptoms of lung cancer. Mayo Clinic Q&A. Are energy drinks a healthy option? Dear Mayo Clinic, my husband has swapped out his regular morning coffee for an energy drink. Are these healthy options for getting his daily dose of caffeine? Do energy drinks have more caffeine than regular coffee? And how much caffeine is too much? Answer. People love their caffeine, whether it's coffee, tea, soda, or energy drinks, like your husband. It's the most common stimulant in the world, and about 90% of all adults consume caffeine in some form every day. Many different caffeine options and flavors are readily available at coffee shops, restaurants, grocery stores, and convenience stores. Energy drinks, in particular, are packaged in bright cans and have exciting names. Caffeine is big business as well. The total global sale of energy drink alone reached $57 billion in 2020. Energy drinks are the second most popular dietary supplement among U.S. teens and young adults behind multivitamins. Caffeine's health effects vary from person to person and depend on the dose. It's been shown to improve vigilance, reaction time, alertness, and ability to concentrate. It can help alleviate the adverse effects of sleep deprivation. Caffeine intake also is associated with a reduced risk of Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, alcoholic cirrhosis, and gout. However, caffeine intake also is linked with nervousness, insomnia, irritability, and panic attacks. Those with pre-existing anxiety disorders may be more susceptible to these effects. Caffeine can be temporarily raise blood pressure, and a high intake has been associated with mild increase in cholesterol levels. Check the caffeine amount in your husband's energy drink. Up to 400 milligrams of caffeine per day is considered safe for most adults. Most contain 100 to 300 milligrams of caffeine per serving, while home-brewed coffee contains 80 to 100 milligrams of caffeine per serving. Of course, these amounts can vary. If his preferred energy drink has 210 or more milligrams of caffeine per serving, consuming more than one per day would place his intake over the recommended level. Excessive caffeine intake, more than 400 milligrams per day, can cause palpitations, tremors, agitation, and gastrointestinal upset. Heavy caffeine use also is associated with an increased risk of other addictive behaviors like smoking and alcohol abuse. People who routinely consume caffeine may develop physical and psychological dependence, and may they experience withdrawal symptoms if intake is abruptly stopped. Another ingredient is to review in this energy drinks is sugar. Many can contain significant amount of added sugar or other sweeteners. High intake of added sugar can contribute to a variety of health problems, so the Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommends limiting the intake of added sugars to no more than 10% of total daily calories. If your husband follows a 2,000-calorie diet, no more than 200 calories per day should come from added sugars. This is about 12 teaspoons a day. One 16-ounce can of some energy drinks can contain as much 210 calories and 47 grams of added sugar, which is equal to roughly 12 teaspoons. This is an entire day's worth of added sugar. Energy drinks aren't all bad, though, especially when consumed in moderation. Some contain vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. Others contain herbal supplements such as ginseng and guarana, which may be used to increase energy and mental alertness. Use caution with these substances, as research on safety and effectiveness is limited. Also, some herbal supplements can interact with medications, so seek input from your husband's healthcare team if he takes prescription medications. It's important to note that people who are pregnant or breastfeeding should limit their caffeine intake to 200 milligrams or less per day. The Food and Drug Administration has not set a safe level for children, but the American Academy of Pediatrics discourages the consumption of caffeine and other stimulants by children and adolescents.
Dear Dr. Roach, I read your recent article about migraines. I'm a millennial who started getting brutal migraines beginning in 2001. I saw several neurologists and took different medications, but nothing really helped. In 2011, I started taking fish oil with high DHA daily. Since then, my migraines have dropped 95% overall, and it helps lower my migraine pain. It's been a miracle. I've been preaching this for years to whomever will listen, hoping to help. There is also a DHA substitute for vegans. Dr. Roach's answer. I'm glad the fish oil supplements have helped you and appreciate your writing to try to help. There are not strong studies to support fish oil supplements to prevent migraines. Migraine treatments are divided into those that stop migraines, called abortive, and those that prevent migraines, called preventative. You are describing preventative treatment, and I couldn't find anything to suggest fish oil as an abortive treatment for migraines. However, there is a well-done study that showed a diet high in omega-3 reduced about half the number of days with migraines and the hours of migraines, but the study was unable to show an improvement in quality of life measurements. The study recommended 1.5 grams of combined N-3 EPA acid and DHA acid in roughly one serving per day, but the study did not look at the plant-based alpha-linolenic acid, a different type of omega-3 oil. Your experience goes to show that perhaps supplements may be beneficial and in any given intervention, some people get more benefit than others. Although most people will not be able to describe the dietary change as a miracle, there may be other benefits from a diet with fatty fish. Further compared with the medications often used to reduce migraines, this diet has very few side effects.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife not sure where to turn when snooping bears stunner. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been together for 6 years, married for 4. We have had a lot of marriage issues during the last few years, sexually and otherwise. I no longer trust him because of something I found out last year. I have his email information, and I also was able to see the search history from his phone on the computer. I discovered that he watches a lot of porn. I don't think it's a big deal, because I know many men and women do. But I saw he was also watching gay porn and searching for pictures of well-endowed guys. Does this mean my husband is gay and likes men? Or does it just mean he likes different sexual things? I'm not sure what to do. I don't know if I should approach the subject with him. I don't want him to know I'm snooping around, so how do I ask him about it without telling him how much I know? Or should I just let it go? Signed, Knows Too Much in Texas. Dear Knows, your husband may be bisexual, gay, or bi-curious. You wouldn't have checked his phone history if you hadn't felt something was wrong. Do not let it go. You will never know the truth unless you ask for it. This does not necessarily have to be a marriage breaker. However, in case your husband has wandered off the screen, call your doctor and ask to be tested for STDs. Dear Abby, my mother puts pictures of me on Facebook, usually old ones, and invariably says, "Look how skinny you were." I'm 60 now, and I don't look skinny anymore. Her comments bother me greatly. Recently, my daughters-in-law said something to her on Facebook about commenting on my weight and how they don't see me as overweight, but as a whole and wonderful person. Now my mother is angry. She says her feelings are hurt because she thought she was paying me a compliment. I can't make her understand that you just don't make comments on people's weight, especially on social media. It is unkind. How do I get through to her? Signed, Weighty Issue. Dear Weighty Issue, if you think trying to reason with someone as insensitive as your mother will work, forget it. You can get through to her by telling her in plain English that her backhanded compliment hurt you, and you don't want it repeated in public or in private. And if she does it again, you and your family will block her on social media, if not from your lives. You deserve an apology. You do not owe her one. Dear Abby, my husband is 59. He is on long-term disability because he has been suffering from a major depression for more than a year. He has asked me not to tell our acquaintances or my co-workers about his health issues. My question is, how should I respond when people ask me what my husband does? I don't like to say he's retired, because that is not the case. Signed, Questioned in Quebec, Canada. Dear Questioned, if you are asked, tell the questioners that your husband is semi-retired. It's the truth, and no one knows how long it will be until he is again fully employed. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.